Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Jackie Cation here. You're listening to The Dork Forest. You know the websites, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com, if you like a determiner. JackieCation.com has everything. Both of my podcasts, all of the stand-up stuff, the new album, links to YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, all the things. But so, I think, does dorkforest.com, where you can look at old videos of different shows. Anyway, if you want to support the show, tell people about the show, review it on iTunes, thumbs it up on Pandora or Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, I appreciate that. You can donate. You can donate monthly. PayPal lets you do that. You can also do my Venmo if you like. It's at Jackie Cation absolutely everywhere. And my email address is jackie@jackiecation.com. And that's what the PayPal is. The PayPal link is on jackiecation.com and dorkforest.com. And go to any of them. Thanks for listening. There's merch. There's stand-up. There's tour guide. You know, you can find out where I'm touring. This is getting long. So let's get into the show.
Hey, Jackie Cation, I'm in my living room. You see Spider-Man? You see Spider-Man? Spider-Man's watching. I have a returning guest. Oh, he has a beverage. I forgot to get one. Zach Sherwin, welcome back to the program.
Hi, buddy. Thanks for having me back. It's so nice to be here.
It was so great doing a show with you. It's at Zach Sherwin, by the way. ZACHSHERWIN. Everywhere. At your Twitters, your Instagrams, your TikToks, your LinkedIn, whatever. Tingle Tangle. Whatever you want to find Zach Sherwin. He'll be available at Zach Sherwin.
And I do want to say I've been posting a lot of Tingle Tangles lately, and I feel like I'm really mastering the platform. I've wanted to have you on the Crossword Show for literally eons, and
yes,
we finally made it happen in Austin, Texas at the Moon Tower JFL Comedy Festival, and you were stupendous.
And you were stupendous, and that thing was hilarious. And all I literally sat there going, this is so much work. Look how much work he's doing. Look how much work he's doing just for the joy of it, which of course, yeah.
Sometimes often people say to me after they see the Crossword Show, that must be so much work. And I feel like I could take it as a left-handed compliment, but that's what I want people to feel, is just like, I did a lot of work and it's so you can just have fun and enjoy this crazy ass thing.
Right. Well, and that's it. I mean, the thing is there's so much work in all of the things that people do. Like if somebody makes you a bookshelf, you're like, oh my God, this was so much work. And boy, did I need this bookshelf.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for making for that work. And it is an appreciation. So
thank you.
And I hope you make a gajillion dollars on it. So.
Thank you. I appreciate it. At the show, you told me you hoped I made $1 billion. So I got a raise since then.
Inflation is wild. Inflation is a little wild. And of course, it's been cooking. I've decided to give you a pay raise in the last month and a half. Yeah.
Not to plug my own television appearances too hard, but the first time I was ever on TV performing was on Kamau Bell's first show, Totally Biased.
Oh,
and I did this rap called Grit and Grin. And it was like a ventriloquism rap. Like I did the whole thing with my teeth clenched. And it was about how like showbiz is like, you just show the outside and you don't show all the like mouth work that's going on behind the scenes, behind the teeth. So that was kind of like the metaphorical concept of the show. Of that rap.
That's right. Cause you'll write raps and then you'll just do freestyle.
I don't freestyle that much these days, but I do occasionally. I will bust it out on occasion.
Because when we met back in the 12th century, I think it was, it might have been in New York, and you were Mr. Napkins.
Yeah, I used to be MC Mr. Napkins, my rap name. 2023 will be the 10-year anniversary of me officially relinquishing the name.
Right. Well, which I always thought was a reference to comics, just the stealing of napkins.
Oh.
I don't know where it came from for you, but that's what I always thought. I was like, we are hard on napkins. Fan of comics.
So. And I feel like there's all these like showbiz legends of like deals being hashed out on like cocktail napkins and stuff like that, or Eminem writing rhymes on napkins. But part of the reason I dropped the name was that I didn't have any origin story that was anywhere near that good. It was just like a wacky choice I made in my team.
And people kept asking you for the origin story, I bet. And you're like, I'm tired now. Let's
eventually
just go with Zach Sherwin.
It's just going to make things easier. I got to do this sooner than later. It was still probably about like 10 years too late to do it. But the second best time to plant a tree.
The time right in front of you. You know how old you're going to be if you don't drop that name? The same age. Okay. So we were going to talk about word stuff, but you thought, can I just slip in some dorkdoms that you may not know that I am? So let's hear it. What do you want to dork out about that we didn't do any prep?
So last time I was on the show was in 2015, and I dorked out about cryptic crossword puzzles.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That was before the crossword show existed, by the way. So, you know, it's nice to see that I'm sticking to my guns.
Right. You still love a letter.
Still love a letter. I mean, should we start there? My wordplay awareness has branched out and flowered since then. Since I came up with the crossword show in like 2017. So I was still 2 years out. That's so wild. Mm-hmm. Careers are weird, man. Like we've known each other for a long time. And I talked to my friend's nephew yesterday, who's 16 and like wants to get into showbiz. And, you know,
you were there at his birth.
And, I delivered him in an elevator. But he was like, so my first question is like, what advice would you give your younger self if you were just getting started? And I was like, way to perfectly play the role of kid asking older person for advice. But I said, I really think the only thing I would say is that you start meeting people right away. Like the game starts as soon as you start playing it. And the people that you meet immediately
will come back. You're going to know
those people your entire career. Like the second you set foot in your first open mic, you are eligible for meeting people who are going to like give you jobs in 30 years. It's so bonkers.
It is. So be nice.
Be
aware.
Be cool, especially if it's beyond your power, as it was mine.
Yes. Yes. Distantly polite. Sometimes when I meet the famous and they're distantly polite, I'm like, this might be all that they can achieve, quite honestly, because of the numbers game, because of how intense people are, because people are, it's just, even if they aren't famous, even if like when you meet somebody in a restaurant, distantly polite is sometimes the best we can do. And I say, aspire to it.
Yeah.
Because if you start there, it'll be fine. Yeah.
Right.
Let that be the base.
Totally. And
yeah. Because it'll be like, fine. Everything above that will be fine.
That's right. You can get into like A, B, C plus gradations later on, but just start with pass fail.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
So how did I even get here? Well, so just to dork out about wordplay stuff for a little bit. So I was like getting into crossword puzzles and that kind of thing. And, you know, to be honest, even though I now host something called the Crossword Show, which for people who don't know, is a show I invented where it's like I collaborate with a different New York Times published crossword puzzle maker with every new puzzle. And we have five of them so far. So the one you did was number five.
By the way, feel free to email me if you are a New York Times published crossword puzzle maker, because maybe you could collaborate with Zach.
Oh, yeah. I mean, now I'm like hooked into the awesome, supportive.
Oh, that's great.
It's a whole universe. And
they all know each other, I bet.
They do. And they're all so smart and interesting and interested. It is like the most, I love them. I'm so happy to be in there to whatever extent I am. So yeah, they make a puzzle. I write clues for it. The clues work like normal crossword clues, but they're also rhyming rap lyrics. And then
I walk
the comics through the show and the crowd watches. We like display everything on like a big projection screen behind. And basically every time the guest panel, which included you in Texas, gets a word right, it like unlocks some content based. So if the word was like pelican based on whatever the clue was, we do some comedy or some trivia about pelicans. And then it kind of goes from there. So I was just getting into that stuff like early on, but now I've learned about all these boutique kinds of wordplay
wordplay.
Oh, hilarious. It gets so deep, dude. It goes so deep. So I'll talk about my favorite kind, which I'm obsessed with spotting in the wild. And so this is called super vocalics. So in the wordplay world, vocal means vowel.
Okay.
And so a super vocalic is a word or a phrase or a name that contains one instance each of all five of the vowels. So it's easier to have an example. So the word facetious is a yeah. really nice example. It has one A, one E, one I, one O, one U. And what's special about, and only one, it can't have two if it has
okay.
repeat, that's not okay. super vocalic. So they're kind of rare. And yeah. facetious is cool because it has all five of the vowels in alphabetical order. So
that's, oh, that's like a little nuts. Bit. Yeah. All right.
Uh-huh. Another really good example is Reformed Judaism, the religious tradition I was brought up in. Austin Powers is super vocalic. Julia Roberts has a super vocalic name.
Okay.
And a really fun, cool thing, because the name was made up by crossword people and they're like brilliant word loving dorks who like joy. Mm-hmm. The word super vocalic is itself super vocalic. It has one of each.
So it does. I just wrote it down and there they are. They're not in alphabetical order though. No, not facetious.
That's just the bonus. And then, so then you get into ones like facetious. There's what's called a perfect five, which is a five word phrase that has one of the vowels in each of the five words. And so the best example of these is a rapper named Ski Mask the Slump God.
I love Ski Mask the Slump God. All right. Mm-hmm. Where's he out of? What's his jam?
I think he's New York, but I'm not positive about that.
Okay.
And so now, so these, I should just give credit where it's due. These were invented by a guy named Eric Chaikin. Eric lives in LA. Mm-hmm. He came up with the name and like did a lot of the like data work. I'll send you a link to a paper he published that's like every combination of the vowels as represented in Webster's dictionary, like every order he like went through and used science to figure it out. And so now I like finding them out in public, just like in the world. And oh my God, it gives me so much joy. I actually worry about like crashing my car when I'm driving because I'm just like looking around trying to find super vocal. And so I'll just tell you two in my immediate neighborhood. I live in Los Feliz in Los Angeles. And so down the street from me is a business called Hillhurst Mortgage, which is a really nice fat super vocalic. But the best one is, I've been driving by it for years. There's a doctor's office and the doctor's name is Michael Burton, MD. So that's super vocalic. And then right underneath it, I'll send you a picture that you can put in your show notes or whatever.
Okay.
It says medical group right underneath.
And it's the word medical group.
Medical group is super vocalic.
Okay. That will be the inset picture in the slug. It'll be a picture of you, picture of the logo, inset, medical group. I'm going to want to see that. That's awesome.
I just sent you the picture so you can take a look.
Done and done. As we did it. So super vocalic, that it's so interesting. I had Ken Jennings on an episode of the Dork Forest once and his dorkdom was geocaching, which is, a hunt, scavenger hunt, but around the world.
And it's like, yeah, right.
And he said the only reason I tell you this is I think my favorite story when he was on was he was saying that the only time he didn't like it was when people would put stuff in like ruins, famous ruins. He's like, it's not a locker. Please do not, stick an army guy behind a rock in Angkor Wat in Cambodia. So there's no need to move the ruins. So I wonder if there's anything like super vocalic. Are there dirty ones? Are there swears? I bet you there are.
That's such a good question. Well, you can come up with that. Like if you contrive them, we can make them up on the spot. Like I'm trying to think like
it's hard.
Fucking has a nice U and an I, and head has an E and an A, so all you're missing is like an O. So got fucking head would be like a fucking head would be a super vocalic.
Boob wouldn't work. Two O's. Two words. Yeah.
Totally, but it's a
tit would work. Sure.
Doesn't close.
Vag has a nice A. Vagina. Actually, two A's. You got to go vag. Yeah, you got to go one. You got to go shortened.
Yeah, just vag.
I don't know why I was like, immediately, I've got to turn it into a dick joke for some reason. It's so there you go.
A dick joke, a dick butt joke would be would be super vocal.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, mm-hmm. A dick butt joke. So something to aspire to, you guys. A dick butt joke. A butt dick joke.
A butt dick joke. Right. The order that you are on those vowels. Pardon me. If we spot any more during the podcast today, we'll flag them. But Dork Forest is instantly disqualified because it's got two O's right out of the gate.
Right. So. Oh. Yep. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you noticed it. Yeah.
There is another, like, a related kind of wordplay. So again, vocal means vowel. And so univocalic is stuff that only has one of the vowels, no matter how many times. So for example, the band Bananarama only has the letter A. Ellen DeGeneres's long name only has the letter E.
Oh, wow.
There's a Tuvan throat singing musical act called Hun Hur Tu. And it's just like the letter U all the way through.
All right.
Crossword show is only O's.
Only O's. So it's univocalic as opposed to supervocalic. Yeah. And are there other vocalics?
Yeah, there's one other I can think of. So supervocalic is all five of the vowels only once each. And then what about if you have because there's ones that have Y in them, right?
Right.
So the Greek root E-U-R-Y, Yuri, means like broad or wide, like in the Eurythmics, for example.
Okay. Oh, nice.
And so Eric Chicken and crew, the aforementioned, made up the word Yurivocalic to describe ones that also have a Y in them. So like the most broadly vowel-y. And it's nice because Yurivocalic is Yurivocalic.
Oh, that's fun for him and you.
Yes.
Because it is, so Yurivocalic is super vocalic, but with also a Y.
But also with a Y.
Yurivocalic. Now we know. Mm-hmm. That is, did you ever read, there was a book. I wonder if I've got it. Nope, I don't. It's in a box. It's called Sharper Teeth. Ooh. And it is a book about Los Angeles, but it is werewolves who are in a pack. Like, and they also play bridge. And there, it is written in some sort of, not iambic pentameter, but it is written in some sort of poetic style.
Right.
And sharp teeth. And for some reason, I'm making the audience sit through it. Hi, guys. You're doing vital work listening to me. Figure out. Sharp Teeth is a book by Toby Barlow.
Ooh.
And it is a book about, and it's a beautifully written book, and it's kind of a fun story, though I understand why it would be hard to start, right? It was hard for me to start, right?
To start reading.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is written, I need them to tell me what it's written in. Instead, here you go. Zach, I'm eating up your Dork Forest time. We can go over by telling you this.
Yeah,
it's an ancient race of lycanthropes, werewolves, mm-hmm. has survived to the present day, and its numbers are growing as the initiated convince LA is down and out to join their pack. Caught in the middle of our Anthony, a kind-hearted, besotted dog catcher, and the girl he loves, a female werewolf who has abandoned her pack, blending dark humor and epic themes with card-playing dogs, crystal meth labs, surfing, and carne asada tacos. Sharp Teeth captures the pace and feel of a graphic novel while remaining as ambitious as any literary novel, because underneath all that fur, it's about identity, community, love, death, and all the things we want our books to be about. Which is adorable, but it does not tell me what it is written in.
How can it not state the constraint? That's the part I'm like, I'm on the edge of my seat.
Yeah. And well, we're fucked, and somebody should email me jackie@jackiecation.com.
And you should look it up. Cause I'm very interested in learning what the rule is. You know, let me say two things. First of all, it just makes me think how much I appreciate constrained writing, and like, it's so freeing, you know, like it's so cool to, I often find that without like one leg of the triangle, I just have nothing to, I don't know how to start formulating and expressing. I think and feel so many things, but it's like, I really find it useful to have some kind of constraint in place to like help direct me and get me started. And then I fill in the other legs of the triangle with like my thoughts and feelings and ideas and excitements. And so I love that about the crossword show, because the words like help me, you know, give me like a jumping off point. And yeah. So I really, that, I find it very freeing.
That's like hip hop as well, right? I mean, that is, that's such an interesting theory, is that constrained reading or writing, constrained both, I suppose, but constrained writing, you find that freeing. Mm-hmm. When you've been given this narrow focus and you could put all of your thoughts and dreams and words and every word you ever wanted to, it just has to rhyme. It just has to be an iambic pentameter. It just has to fit nine letters down and right. also mix with the cross, you know, the way across, you know, and again, going to make it about me. It's because I like you. When I was in fifth grade, yeah. one of my least favorite teachers had one of my most favorite. I really liked her, but she didn't like me, which made me not like her back, because that yeah. is how I live my life. I like everybody until they don't like me. And then I'm like, no, I guess I don't get to like you either. Anyway, but the thing is, Mrs. Kauth, who loved my sister Darla, she would make us write stories in fifth grade. And the way she did it was she would take like sort of an improv class where she would take suggestions from the kids. Mm. She's like, I need four words. And then she would make the title of everybody's story.
Whoa.
The dog who made sandwiches, right? Whatever. The boat that landed on the roof, whatever. And right. then you would have to write a two or three page story. Which is a lot for a 10-year-old. All of my stories, weirdly enough, had children beating up adults. Such a weird twist.
I think that speaks to a lifelong inclination on your part to like call bullshit out and like, you know, speak to
authority.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I'm interested, just like, do you feel, because one thing I see when I watch stand-ups is like, I've found all these, you know, corners to paint myself into. And then like, to the extent that people think it's exciting to see somebody like, you know, like Houdini escape from a trap, like that's what I'm trying to get to one day, is be like, look at this trap I made up for myself and I'm going to get out of it. Is that fun to watch? I hope so. I've got a whole career on it. But right. when I watch standups, which I honestly don't identify as, I've done standup before, but like, I don't think that's what I am. When I watch people like you, who I do think of as a very pure standup, I think like, how did they, you have to have some internal sense of like, this is the kind of thing I, Jackie, talk about when I'm on stage. I mean, do you relate to that? Like, does this constraint thing feel applicable for how you do?
It's interesting because I never think of stand-up as constrained at all, mm-hmm. but it must be, right? What? It must be just because of the fact that if I look at like my old, like I'm trying to find clips to put on online now. And if I look at old bits, mm-hmm. they're in sort of the same form, right? They're yeah. vaguely storytelling. They're a little quippy. I've got the same attitude I had 30 years ago as I do right now, but it's tighter now, right? I get to the punchline yeah. faster. Sometimes the topics are bigger, or I go deeper into them. But I think with stand-up, as far as I can tell, the only rule is that there has to be punchlines. And when I first started, When I first started, there was just a lot of bossiness that I didn't really listen to. But there was a secondary bossiness that came with Seinfeld. And it was, how many laughs per minute were you getting?
Right. It got like data quantified.
Right. There was someone with a spreadsheet who lost their damn mind. And they were like, well, it's got to be every 4 seconds or every 2.5 seconds, every 6 seconds, whatever it was. And I remember thinking, that. I can't. That will not be I will not be able to achieve that. You might hear a train or something behind me, airplane, a train in the sky.
A sky train. I don't hear it. I remember, wasn't there a documentary that came out that like rated comedians on their like laughs per minute?
No, but that sounds like something I don't want to watch, but I want to know about, right?
Like it named specific comedians.
Right, because you're just, and because, and then it would be like when you think about different stand-up, like you think about, it's a small world, but I wouldn't want to paint it. Who's that guy?
Oh, yeah.
Stephen Wright.
Stephen Wright.
Yeah. So he's the quintessential one-liner guy, right?
Right, right.
And I remember I went and saw him because I was like, what does 45 minutes of that look like? Well, it isn't that. That's not what it is. No one can sustain it. No one wants to watch it. I'm sure it's very funny, but nope. He mixed it up with some sort of longer stories, not that long, and some pauses, but that's a real constraint.
Yeah. That sounds exhausting to listen to a straight 45 minutes of that. And yes, texture seems like it would be essential there. I sort of feel like maybe it might just have gotten lost in the Zoom exchange before, but I said stand-up feels the opposite of constrained writing or like expression to me. Maybe the constraint is like, you know, that thing that it's like that people love to say that it's like the purest art form, but maybe one of the ways in which I agree with that is that the constraint is like you, like one needs to chip away the excess marble of the sculpture to like figure out what the fuck you are and like what is a true Jackie thing to say. And then the constraint is like, would Jackie, the person who lines up Venn diagram style as closely as possible with the Jackie on stage, like would Jackie say that? Is that in Jackie land?
Right. I wonder. Yeah, that is maybe that's why people think it's the hardest job in the world, is because you have to find your own voice so hard.
Yeah.
And if the only constraint is you and you don't know who you are, you're just going to throw poop at the walls.
Yeah.
In the hopes to get a reaction, which is what all comics do in the beginning. Right.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's part of the learning curve. Yeah.
Yes. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just am so excited by this topic. Like sometimes you, in the early days, one bad thing that can happen is you come up with enough accidental stuff that anyone could say that you like think you're doing it. But then at a certain point, you're going to crash against the reality, which is that it only goes so far. And I feel like if it's going to be sustainable, you do have to figure out what kind of stuff you say and nobody else does.
Yes. Yes. And one of the suggestions that I was given early on was that, that if you make it personal, you know, you could talk about this is the advice that Vanda Michalowski gave me in 1984, which was you can talk about really broad things like, isn't punk rock dumb?
Yep.
Or isn't that but you have to make it your own. And everybody could do that, because how were you introduced to punk rock? Did your brother show you a thing? And, you know, is that, you know, it's a lot of comics do stuff about traveling. A lot of comics do stuff about television, and everybody travels, everybody watches television. You just have to make it your own. And that goes back to that. You're your only constraint. Mm-hmm. But what about like novels and stuff? Like when I think about, there's a comic out of the UK who just wrote, he's writing a series, and his first novel was so successful. And it quite honestly, it's adorable and interesting and funny. And it isn't stand-up comedy funny. It's just funny.
Hmm.
And it's called The Thursday Murder Club.
Ooh.
I think they're going to make a TV show or a movie or something. He's a British comic named Richard Osman.
Okay.
He looks like sort of a not as regular featured Greg Proops. Like he's a giant, he's a giant guy. And he's super funny. And he's on that game show Taskmaster in the UK.
Oh yeah. Right.
For a season or something. But he has written, it's set in a retirement home. And so he's writing these four older characters who are pensioners, who are retirees. Mm-hmm. And they are all fascinating people, but it has that light touch that a comic might write fiction in. Hmm. But I don't know how he's doing it, because I would like to write fiction. And he's got this light touch that I would love to write like that.
I feel like writing fiction and novels, because like we're writers, we must be. Writing fiction and novels feels to me like the most incomprehensible thing that's the closest to what I do. Like I would not know how to put my first foot down in writing a novel, which I've read enough writers to know that they say stuff like, just start writing. But that's one of those pieces of advice that's like, just make it personal, where you're like, okay, I get intellectually why that would make sense, but I still don't get how to do it. And it is just like, you have to decide you're going to do it, and then you start figuring it out.
Right. I think it's probably one of those practice makes perfect kind of learn skill kind of thing, where you, if you just did start writing, eventually you would figure out what you were writing.
Yes.
And it might take 70,000 words to figure that out, which would feel, which literally feels like cutting my own throat. But because the thing about stand-up is the instant gratification. So.
Right.
Which doesn't occur. Yeah.
Did you ever read The Phantom Tollbooth?
Yes.
Norton Juster. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a part that stuck with me from the end of that kid's book where the king says to the boy before he goes on the quest, like, I have to tell you something about this quest, but I can only tell you when you come back. And so that's like set up at the beginning of the novel. And then the novel happens, the boy, spoiler alert, in the children's book, the boy comes to the quest. He doesn't die horribly on the way.
Right, children's book written 40 years ago. He lives.
And so he comes back and the king says, hey, so remember that thing? And the kid says, yeah. And the king says, this quest is impossible. It can't be accomplished. And the kid's like, but I did it. And the king's like, I know. If I had told you before you left, like, you wouldn't have been able to do it. And so sometimes I feel like comedy and show business careers feel like that, and kind of just like life in general, where you're like, my God, if somebody told me, you know what I mean? Like, to whatever milestones I have attained, like, what would be involved in getting here? It's not, it hasn't even been that hard. I just am not that tough, where I'm like, this has been a lot of fucking work. So it feels, I feel like at the thought of like writing 70,000 words before I start being like, even on the board with writing a novel, I'm just like, man, what an endeavor. Hats off, British guy who wrote the Thursday Murder Club.
Right. And I will say that I think that everybody who likes a murder mystery or who likes to read fiction would like these books because of how much he made them his own. You know, I mean, when you think about the elderly, you're like, oh, they're old, they can't move. And nobody does that, Jackie. Just you, you're a dick. So, but the thing is we forget the jobs they used to do, right? The information. So his four characters is a woman who was clearly an MI6 or MI5 or whatever James Bondy thing, right? She was clearly a spy. One of the other women was a nurse. One of the guys was a union organizer, rabble rouser. And the other guy was a psychologist. And so that is quite honestly a great Scooby-Doo team.
It is.
And he writes character really good because he's been staring at people doing stand-up comedy for 25 years, and he could pretty much find a good place to enter into somebody's psyche from it, right? And whenever you enter into somebody's psyche, you have to make a choice whether you're going to do it sort of with love or with hate, right? There's going to be judgment every time, but if you did it did you just put in headphones?
Yes. Oh my God. I'm so sorry.
Okay. So the local will not be of much use, but we still have the Zoom recording. So
do you?
Yep. All good. No sweat. Okay.
I'm re-rolling GarageBand audio now.
No, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
I'm so sorry, dude. It's been a while.
Yeah. It is an exciting time. And plus I keep telling stories. This is your dork dump. So,
okay. You have Zoom audio. It's okay.
Yeah. It's all good.
Okay.
Ugh. Yeah. We're good. Cause we're
sorry,
we're Jackie. Yeah, no, we're at halfway. So we're doing great. We're doing great.
Then let me jump back in. So I hope there's a cut point here. It's just making me think how much genre is a constraint. And so maybe if I were going to write a novel, one way I would jump in would be like, okay, I'm going to do a murder mystery because there's all these things that already are set up that I know I have to do. So maybe that's one way in which this kind of thing is like,
that's a constraint. I think like if you have like picking a genre.
Yeah. And just to loop it back to my dorkdom, that is part of what appeals to me about a super vocalic. They're so rare. So when you do find one
and it's basic, you can sense it. And when you find one that's really special, like Michael Burton, MD, stacked on top of Medical Group, you're like, oh my God, this is so good. It's like such a great example of this very specific thing. And you know, that like crowds love specificity on stage.
Yep. Yeah, they do. Could you write a crossword that was all super vocalics, or could you write a, could that Chaikin guy write a book?
So, okay. So here's what this brings up for me. There are definitely crossword puzzles that are univocalic. Like it becomes quickly apparent that they're pulling a stunt and there's only one vowel the whole way through. Mm-hmm. Now in a crossword puzzle, they're already so constrained. There's tons of constraints at play with how grids work and how long words can be. And like the fact that they all have to, every box has to go both across and down. They're like very constrained. So then when you put a theme constraint on top of that, like you only have one vowel, there's like sliders and one of them is like how enjoyable it is to solve. And that one starts diminishing at a certain point. So that's kind of like where the elegance of the crossword puzzles come in. I feel like a novel that was written, there actually is a famous novel. It was written in French and it's called La Disparition, The Disappearance. And it's written without the vowel E, which like in English is the most common vowel in French. It's by a guy named Georges Perec. And the book's all about actually like meaning from constraint. The book's about his parents being killed in the Holocaust, which they were. And so the ubiquity of the letter E, which interestingly doesn't appear in the word ubiquity or ubiquitous, but it is the most ubiquitous vowel in the English language. The letter E doesn't appear throughout the whole novel. And that's like, you know, he uses it as a metaphor for like the centrality of having your parents yanked away from you. It's like as big a loss as like, you can still navigate life without it, but it's like an E being disappeared from your language.
You know, I used to judge that pretty harsh. I mean, did you ever see Rumblefish? Whenever a movie means something, it was a book, but from
Outsiders, Hinton, right?
Hinton. Hinton. Yeah. So it was Mickey Rourke. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was in black and white, except for the goldfish. Cause he was like the goldfish, Zach. Anyway, it was also, but that is, I forget who directed Mulholland Drive. That guy.
Yeah.
He's very, very, Lynch, David Lynch. Whenever I watch a David Lynch movie, I mean, I would love to have him on the Dork Forest for any number of reasons. But numbers. Talk about that. But it's definitely a dorkdom the way he does movies.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like he's sitting next to you, like we are all with our dorkdoms and our nerd cred, going, get it. Get it? Did you see that thing?
Right.
And so it's hard for me to watch David Lynch movies because I feel like he's sitting next to me going, how cool is this? Right? Did you see what I did right there?
Can you believe I pulled this off?
It's weird, right? You get it? And so it's hard for me to watch his stuff. But I think if I met him made self-aware of that he knows that it's a dorkdom and that he knows... Uh-huh. I think I would enjoy his work much better. You know, that I could come from a place where he's like, these are my constraints that I've artificially created because it makes me write better. It makes me perform better. It makes me create better. Mm-hmm. That gives me more of a sense of hope for whatever somebody's doing, you know?
Yes. And I so appreciate the elegance of like an author or a filmmaker who is like not standing in front, like waving and pointing at themselves like the whole time you're reading or watching. Like,
yeah,
it can be really distracting and get in the way.
It could pull you out of the situation. But I suppose to some extent, it's no different than using like the hardest yarn to knit with, you know, like if you want to.
Yeah.
Like if you want to make a hat, but you want to make it out of spider webs, right? Or whatever would be the hardest thing to knit with, right?
I like that choice you just made. It's wearing a t-shirt that says improv. I feel like you just did a gift.
That's it. Improv.
The spider web hat.
Diva Zappa was on the Dork Forest and she talked about how she tries to use really hard yarn sometimes.
Oh. And that was too specific for you just to have pulled up. I mean, I was like,
well, wow. it was a reference that was pulled from, you know, yes. There's, you know, 900 episodes. So right. There's going to be some specificity.
I love it. So people who know, most people are just like, oh, great, a hat. But then people who are like, wait, this is knitted with whatever yarn, Everest yarn.
Yeah. Yeah. The gossamer wings. I don't even, all I know I, that. Yeah.
And that takes so much humility and, like, I feel like maturity on the part of the person to just be like, I aspire to that, to just be like, yeah, I did this. And, like, it's going to be cool any level you appreciate it at. But, like, for the people who really are, like, keyed in, they're going to be like, oh, my God, what? Like, to just trust that and not be like, this. And by the way, this is really hard. Like, most people couldn't pull off what I did.
Right. Without tooting your own horn. It's literally like the thing I think that you could aspire to when with anything super specific, the thing that comes to mind for me are like the reason I think the Marvel movies are better is it's clearly made by people that have spent their noses in a long box looking at really weird and rereading comic books, you know?
Right.
And
right.
So they can place all these, you know, the creation of the Easter egg itself, you know, whether it's Marvel or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And creativity, the constraint thing is amazing. That's a really interesting way to jumpstart any kind of creativity, I think.
Mm-hmm. Chance the Rapper last week put out a new thing that's called a bar about a bar. And he's like, it's not like the kind of jokes, like not like in jokes where a guy walks into a bar, but a different kind of bar. And also like bars, like, you know, versus musical measures of rap music, and lyrics, but it's the video for it is like a video of him doing a writing exercise. Like, so he just is like, it starts with him being like, okay, here's what I have so far. And he like looks into a notebook and starts reading, and then a music video blossoms and flourishes out of it. But
oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So people, it's a tool. People know about it. The constraint thing. It helps get it going.
Yeah. I think however you work with, and it can be anything as usual, but we're talking about words. I'm here with Zach Sherwood, by the way. Feel free to see. Is there a ZachSherwood.com that people could check your tour dates?
Crosswordshow.com is where the tour dates are. And
okay.
I can't stop doing it. If you write out .com, that's univocalic with O's, crosswordshow.com, none of the other vowels, but,
awesome.
Yes. So at crosswordshow.com, we're doing, a week of shows in July, a little bit over a week on the East Coast. So around New England and New York and Boston and the DC area, Arlington, Virginia, technically, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll be doing the an adapted version of the show that you did in Austin.
Nice.
Yeah.
Soup, that's fun.
Cool. I'm excited for it.
Are there going to be new crosswords? Is there a sixth coming that you'll be touring with?
Yeah. Deep in number six.
Okay.
I'm writing it. And when it exists again, we'll start doing it in LA.
Awesome.
It's Jackie, I love this show. I won't gush too much, but every time I'm like, oh man, how the hell am I gonna like top myself with the last one? And it just, so far I keep feeling like I've been able to do it, and it's great. I haven't had a project I've been this excited about. It just feels like rapping and comedy and wordplay and like hosting are the kinds of things that I like feel like I like to do. And so that show, I get to do all of them in like one little universe.
Right. And whatever those words are, you said that pops you to write something about pelicans or whatever that is. So that is, it's got to be helpful that it creates its own, it sort of creates its own content.
Yes, it does. But there is also a really juicy creative challenge for me, which is like, okay, do I care about pelicans insofar as I like animals and find them basically interesting? Sure. But finding out how to like make it pertain to me, or to like not just be like completely soulless like edutainment about pelicans.
Didn't
that's like,
you do a video good. About Sully and the birds?
Yeah, I did. Goose MCs.
Yes, it's Andy quotes one of the lines all the time.
Don't make me swan up.
Yep, That's the line he quotes. Don't make me swan up. And
I'm honored.
Yes. And then
to be occupying Andy brain space.
Brain space. And then sometimes he will just swan up. And so the people should go see that.
It's on my YouTube, which is just Zach Sherwin. But we choreographed a Swan Lake homage at a little theater in downtown LA, and it is a balletic reenactment of Chesley Sullenberger landing the plane in the Hudson River.
That's it. So check it out, because it is fascinating. And one of the things I do love about your work is that the commitment to the small thing, the thing that you, that just grabs your attention, and it might be a huge thing. Like, everybody was into Sully, right? Everybody was like, that was amazing. I was in a cab when it happened in New York City. Whoa. and the cab picked me up, and he said, a plane just landed on the Hudson. And I was like, what are you listening to? And I thought it was like some right-wing radio. And he goes, no, I was just on the, and it just happened. And I was like, well, that's nuts. He goes, I know. I think people live too.
Wow. And what a time when big things happened and they were good.
Yeah, right? How great was that?
Those were the days.
Do you ever feel like you want to write the thing that can buy the world a Coke? You ever think that you could write something that'll just sort of fix stuff?
Oh, I see what you mean. Do I feel like that drive to do that?
Yeah. Do you ever aspire to that kind of thing? Or do you ever, because I don't aspire to it, but I find that sometimes I have written something that people will come up and go, well, that actually helped.
Wow.
And most of the time it's just, I would say 98, 99% of my material is just, well, that cheered me up. This day was a pain in the ass.
That's fascinating. The thing that's coming to mind is that in 2015, I saved a duck, and it was a really weird, intense, funny, ultimately very meaningful experience. I got him he was going to be killed, and I got him rehomed at an animal shelter, in an animal sanctuary in New Mexico. It was wild. It was a whole thing. And I made a few videos about it, and I wrote a trilogy of raps, laying out the saga. And then I made music videos for them, which are also on, they're called Duck 1, Duck 2, and Duck 3. They're on my YouTube channel. I can't stop writing about waterfowl, apparently.
Right. Apparently there's an album, there's an EP there.
Yeah. Just put that out. And 4 songs of the way. And, that was the, I mean, to me, I'm like, that's the only meaningful, I just feel like, I love my material so much, but I rarely feel like I punch through and say something that has some weight to it or something.
That might have freed the slaves or something. It's not. Well, the thing is, it's so unlikely that it is that, right? I mean, there's so much pressure, or at least I feel some pressure. Let's talk about me, because it isn't everybody, but I feel some pressure to try to do. Like, I wrote this weird they-them joke, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a good joke. And it just sort of, in at its best, it acknowledges the pronouns and the fact that it's not that big of a fucking deal. Mm-hmm. And, but is it the best joke I've ever written? It doesn't. I've talked myself into a corner here, because it actually doesn't matter if it's the best joke I've ever written, because it was the joke that I wrote. Mm-hmm. And now it is on an album, and it doesn't matter if it was, because the best joke I've ever written might be the next joke, right? Or what currently is the best. Okay, Zach, I think you should take over.
I relate so hard, because I feel like at first the challenge when one is being creative is to just say anything at all. Like, you have to figure out. And so then I feel like the next one is, let me also personalize it. My original challenge was just figure out what the fuck to say. And when I figured it out, I was like, oh my God, I have all this stuff that I want to say. And then I was like, okay, now you need to make it better. And also getting more personal is the next challenge, and being real and opening up. And then I feel like for me, I'm still working on that. And then I feel like the next challenge after that is going to be then expanding it even more universally and like talking about the world and making it like as good as the stuff that was like the wacky stuff at first and then the personal stuff next.
Yes.
So you have to get on the board, then you have to figure out who you are, and then like if you're interested in it, and I don't think you need to be, but you like the funnel goes even wider.
Yeah. As the world gets slightly bigger. Like I haven't seen the George Carlin documentary and I mm-hmm. won't. Let's face it.
Same.
Right. I'm sure it's wonderful.
Yes.
But I do get the sense without all the information. That's why I have the Dork Forest. It's about enthusiasm, you guys. Is that the point is that when he first started out, he was just trying to get on the board. Mm-hmm. And he got on the board and he wrote good jokes about the things around him. And mm-hmm. then as it got more and more personal, the world became bigger. You know, mm-hmm. weirdly enough, the more you look inside, the more you're aware of what's happening around you and you can write these bigger topics. Mm-hmm. And so by the end of his career, I think the last set of his, I thought I saw was probably in the early 90s, maybe in the late 80s, but it was so sociopolitical. I mean, it was to the point of being political, naming names kind of things, right?
Right, right.
Where he was like, we're going to be talking about the earth. We're going to be talking about the universe. We're going to be talking about the atoms. So it's going to be the specificity led to the whole universe and the whole of justice versus injustice, you know, a good life and a bad life, and it felt like something to aspire to, that if you could write so specifically, it's about everyone.
Yes. And you said earlier about my stuff that I do, that like I seem to like zero in on something really small, and then like the joke part of the joke is like blowing it up to these like epic high stakes proportions. But I feel like that's kind of how I feel about, I mean, what you're saying about Carlin is that he would like pounce on a thing and like hold it up, and then like, you know, like a TARDIS looks like a phone booth, but it turns out to contain this whole dimension inside, throwing a bone to the Dork Forest sort of culture. Like these small things turn out to contain like enormous, enormous things inside and sort of like behind their external facade. And so, I relate to that with Carlin, and I feel like that's like a lot of creativity in general. You're like, I'm just this little pocket of like reality manifesting in life, but like it all kind of ties back to the central hub. Not to get too far out there. I hope that made sense.
Oh, it made sense. And it's this entire episode has been out there. Because it started with that with the boutique wordplay,
mm-hmm.
right? Which if you the more specific the sentence.
Mm.
It contains multitudes, right? I mean, is there anything that we, like, I always think to myself, because we're 5 minutes out from an hour. Wow. And
so you were right. It does go fast.
It goes fast. So there's your published works. Let's tell people that if they want to hear your raps, they can hear your albums, right?
Yes, you can. That stuff's all on my website and
ZachSherwin.com.
Yeah. You know, I haven't put out an album in years, and actually the next one I'm going to put out is the original cast recording for the show you saw. Anything too much away, it has way more music than most of my crossword shows do. Usually there's just an across clue rap and then a down clue rap and then a grand finale rap, but this one has 9 original songs plus some like bonus material. So
so instead of 3, there's 9.
Yeah, I wrote an album for this show. So I'll be putting that out later this year. But yeah, the albums are out there. Can I sneak in one last dorkdom before we adjourn?
Oh, please. And there's always the thing about the Dork Forest, and hear this, Rangers. Sometimes you got to take control back from me. So rest it back, Zach Sherwin. Let's hear it.
So the other thing that it occurred to me to talk about was I'm a journal dork. I graduated from college in 2002, and I had a job as a paralegal at a law firm, and I'm real rule follower-y, and I'm very suggestible. Like when I read stuff about like routines that successful people have, I have to like tell myself, just because you read that and they do it doesn't mean you need to start adding it to your already considerable like uptight schedule and burdens.
Right.
But I was just out of college and this lawyer I worked for tossed like a daily planner that some he'd got like in a swag bag or something. And he was like, here, see if you can use this for anything. And I was like, it changed my life. And so I started journaling daily and it's turned into 20 years later, I like keep a journal daily of everything like major that happened the day before. And now I'm going back through and typing up my old hard copy journals into Google Docs. And so I'm going on this reverse tour of my life, like on a granular day-to-day basis. And so I'm currently typing up what happened to me in 2006. And it's getting to the point where I'll like type stuff up and be like, I have no memory of any specific thing this day. And what? So the yeah. project will conclude in 2002, but it is weird time travel. And I was like, I'm going to talk about this with Jackie and I'm going to look and see when the first mention of Jackie in my journals is. And
oh, because you'll be able to search in your Google Doc if it happens.
That's why I'm typing yeah. them up, because I want to be able to access all the data. But so on the first mention of you in the first mention of you in my journals is July 28th, 2015. It says, then to Jackie Cations for Dork Forest, Cryptics, Eminem, Sandman, saw Tiberius the Lizard.
And Tiberius passed away.
I know.
2018, 23 years old Tiberius was. And July 28th, that was the year 2015. Yeah, that was the year I turned 50. 5-0. Yeah, big year. Didn't do anything. A lot of people do things. I'm not much of a numerologist.
Same. So, or a birthday guy.
Or a birthday person. I'm just like, okay, it'll be fine. There was one birthday that was super fun. See, you're going to have to wrest it back from me. You will actually, by the way, like that Thursday Murder Club, because one of the narrators, there's sort of a narrator and then there's a first person narrator, and the first person narrator is keeping a journal.
Oh, I love it.
So you might enjoy that.
I'm going to check it out. And your recommendation goes a long way with me. I'm aware of like two other people who I've heard do this obsessive daily journaling thing, and they're both Republican politicians. So it makes me sort of introspect a little bit about where some of it might be coming from, but I feel, you know, whatever.
Well, you know, I kept a diary journal. I think I turned it into from when I think I was about 8 years old, 8 or 9 years old, until I started doing stand-up, and then I got notebooks.
Right.
Yeah.
Which are comedy notebooks are a journal
of a sort. It definitely tells you what you're thinking about, because you see set lists and you see set lists and you see set lists.
And in some ways they're more meaningful than like a mechanical accounting of the major events of the day. Cause you're like, okay, this is what I was actually thinking and feeling, as opposed to like, I went to see Cousin David or whatever it is.
Right. Right. My initial journaling was mostly, I saw Star Wars again today. You know, you're just like, all right, calm down. I read Harriet the Spy. I wanted to have a journal. So
Harriet the Spy was awesome.
Really was.
I loved that book.
Did you read Sport? Did I what?
Did you read Sport?
I did not. Is that the other book by her?
It's about, Sport was one of the characters, one of the side characters. He got his own book. Harriet made some appearances. Anyways, please don't let me cut you off.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, I'm trying to read her biography.
Oh, yeah.
And I had to stop reading it because she sounds like a real pill.
Oh, but no.
She died early, though. She died at like 42 or and she only started writing when she was like 35.
What?
Yeah, it was a quick one. And
wild.
Yeah, it was wild. And she sounded like a bit of a button pusher. But you know what? That's what Harriet would have grown up to be. A
totally.
Total button pusher. She was a freaking spy.
Harriet took no shit.
No shit was taken. And she gave no fucks.
Yes.
Came from money. So she didn't have to.
Right. And, she had a nice platform from which to hoard the fucks.
Right. Right. Oh, my gosh. Okay. So we are at 59 minutes, you guys. Zach Sherwin, ZACHSHERWIN. That is neither a super vocalic or a univocalic.
No.
Vocalic?
Vocalic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Depending on what my middle name is, Zach, you know, something Sherwin could be. Could make it happen, but it's not.
Have you thought about creating a new middle name so it could
yes.
be?
Yes.
Are you willing to tell us what one of those might be?
Oh, I just considered it in the last 15 seconds. I haven't devoted any thought yet.
Rangers, we're going to have Zach back on. We're going to find out what his fictional middle name will be so that he could be a super vocalic. And I will tell you this.
Yeah. Let me offer one while I'm here, because life's short and who knows.
Right.
The universe,
you can slip on a banana peel.
Exactly.
Right when you hang up. Okay.
Zach Donut Sherwin would be super vocalic if you spell it D-O-N-U-T. And who wouldn't want their middle name to be Donut? Everybody?
It's Andy and I have a recurring joke where the name of our child, and as I approach 60, we have to continue making it. It's going to be Donut.
Making the child.
Yeah, making the child, naming that child, and it is currently Donut Ashcraft.
Oh, come on.
That's fantastic. Too many A's, though. Could have gone with a univocalic, though.
Yeah, you're right.
But, Zach, it is always a joy and a super fun time to hang out with you. Thank you so much for doing the Dork Forest.
I am so honored to be pals with you after all these years. I think the world of you, and this was a joy. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And, Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?